This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I'm June Chan. I'm a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics and urology. And I do a lot of research on prostate cancer epidemiology for 25 plus years.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stacey Kenfield. I'm also a professor of urology and epidemiology and biostatistics. I've been at UCSF since 2012. Both June and I trained at Harvard. She recruited me here many, many years ago, and now we've been working together for, I think, 18 to 20 years. Okay, I will kick it off. We are going to actually start with some quick hits on some of the most important studies that have been done in the past year, just to orient everyone to this topic on diet and exercise, and also hopefully give you our main take-home messages that we hope you take away from the session today. Oh, good. Okay, so this is a paper that we published in 2023. The lead author was one of our graduate students. June and I are part of this paper. We were interested in looking at healthy behavior scores, a combination of diet, exercise, and BMI, on two outcomes, prostate cancer progression and prostate cancer specific mortality. And this paper incorporated a number of different scores. One was a prostate specific score focused on what has been published in the literature regarding benefits for these outcomes. The other scores we looked at was an American Cancer Society guideline score based on their guidelines, and then also an American Institute for Cancer Research World Cancer Research Fund score based on their guidelines. And so this slide summarizes those findings. All three of those scores were either associated with better, lower prostate cancer progression, lower prostate cancer specific mortality, or both. And these are the items that were part of those scores. So we've grouped them together to provide action items for you. So the items that are boxed in red are things to avoid. No smoking, being a long-term quitter is good, and no sugar-sweetened beverages, for example, soft drinks and sports drinks. You want to limit include saturated fat and ultra-processed food, whole milk, and red and processed meat. And I put the cutoffs there for you so you can see what you should aim for. Things to moderate include your body size. We use body mass index as an indicator of body size, although it's not perfect. We also recommend that you moderate your alcohol intake. So the moderate level we found in our studies is about 3 to 14 servings per week of wine, or less than or equal to 2 servings of alcohol per day per the US guidelines. And in one of the scores, the AICR score, they actually recommend no alcohol as the lowest risk group. So I don't want to say that moderate drinking is great, but if you don't drink, we don't recommend that you drink. But if you already drink, we wanted to let you know it's probably not harmful. Yes, in moderation. Thanks, June.
It's a U shape. So the things in the middle are things that come in a U shape, so to speak. Like there's a sweet spot in the middle that you're aiming for. Too much is going to be bad. Too little is going to be bad.
The things on the right are things we want you to take away as things to focus on for good health, for prostate health and overall health. So that includes eating your fruits and vegetables, eating your whole grains, eating enough fiber at that level of 30 grams per day, and then incorporating physical activity, which June will go into a little bit in more detail. But the US physical activity guidelines do recommend this level of 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise, or a combination. So this slide is a slight variation of the first slide that you saw. This slide focuses on things that have been associated with prostate cancer specifically, prostate cancer progression or prostate cancer death. And some of these factors were not in the prior scores that I showed you. So we have published on selenium supplementation showing that high dose selenium supplements are harmful for prostate cancer mortality. And then on the right side, you can see we've added the cooked tomatoes, Cooked, the lycopene in cooked tomatoes is more bioavailable, so we recommend cooked versus raw tomatoes. Cruciferous vegetables, things like Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, broccoli, kale, are those types of vegetables. And then fish at 2 servings a week is our recommendation.
And again, just to clarify on selenium, it's a U-shaped situation. So we're really saying be cautious about taking single high-dose supplements. So too little is also not going to be good.
Let's see. Okay, so I just wanted to also have a slide on the relationship between dietary patterns and these outcomes. And so these are analyses that were done actually I led one of the papers in 2014 on the Mediterranean diet. But these other papers were done in 2015, and this is the evidence to date. So even though it's pretty old, these were used in a ACS guideline document that was published in 2022. They only updated every 10 years, and that was the evidence at the time and still is the evidence, that a Western pattern has been associated with higher risk of both prostate cancer mortality and overall mortality. And you can see the foods there that are characterized by that pattern. While a prudent pattern and a Mediterranean diet pattern have both been associated with lower risk of overall mortality. Now, neither of those have been associated with prostate cancer specific mortality, but I have some exciting news on another slide that you'll see soon. So anyway, these are the diets that have been studied the most in relation to overall mortality and prostate specific mortality. And that's the evidence to date. Okay, this analysis, both June and I were also a part of. Dr. Stacy Loeb was the lead author. We published this analysis last month. This looked at a plant-based dietary pattern and quality of life in men with prostate cancer. And this was done in the Health Professionals Follow-Up Study. It's a cohort study led at Harvard. Both June and I worked on the study for many years while we were there. This analysis included 3,500 men with non-metastatic prostate cancer. And we saw in this analysis that people that were eating more plant-based foods compared to those who were eating fewer plant-based foods had better scores for sexual function, urinary function. That includes the urinary irritative and urinary incontinence domains and vitality. So that was really exciting. And if you're interested, we can send you the paper that is out in publication. We have exciting news to share that we recently received a decision of acceptance for a paper that is in press right now, showing that people that adhere and consume more plants have a better and lower risk of progression, prostate cancer progression. This is done in the CAPTURE cohort that's based here at UCSF. So more details to come on that. It should be out in about 6 to 8 weeks. And I will turn it over to June.
So let me just set the stage for what I chose to select to present here today on exercise. So probably about like 12-ish years ago, we published some of the first papers looking at exercise after a diagnosis of prostate cancer and prostate cancer specific outcomes. So one of those papers was led by Dr. Kenfield and another was led by Dr. Aaron Van Blarigan, both of whom I subsequently successfully snagged from Harvard and brought here to UCSF. So very happy about that. And we've focused a lot on exercise since that time. So in those papers, those were the first papers to look at exercise after diagnosis, prostate cancer progression in one case, and another paper was looking at prostate cancer death. We also did, Stacy also looked at all-cause mortality, which was known, I mean, not so surprising. It's been known that exercise helps protect from all-cause mortality, but the unique thing about that publication in 2011 was the specific finding of possible protection for prostate cancer-specific death. So since then, there's been a lot of other papers that have come out to confirm and corroborate those findings from other large cohort studies focused on diet after diagnosis in people with prostate cancer. So just to say, it's been a consistent finding over the last decade plus. So now back to just the quick hit here to highlight some latest news. This is a paper from the prostate cancer, prostate, lung, colorectal, and ovarian screening trial. It was a national randomized control trial done in the United States. the results here are not from the randomized part. It is what we call like secondary or observational look at that data. But it was, they were looking in over 11,000 people who were diagnosed with cancer and looking at their physical activity patterns after diagnosis, and then what was the subsequent risk of death. And so as you can see up here, there's a, this was a pan-cancer analysis. So in more than a dozen types of cancer types represented. Although, of note, there were 4,200 people with prostate cancer in that 11,000. So it was the biggest group, people with prostate cancer. So in that study, there was a 25% lower risk of death for people with cancer. So that was like novel, because while there has been work done in prostate cancer by ourselves and others in breast and colorectal, the more common cancer types, this was the first study to really show like in a pan-cancer group, and for some cancer types that have never been studied with regards to physical activity, that there was a benefit for all-cause mortality. And I put up here, they were looking at what we would say following the US guidelines or following guidelines versus not following guidelines. Those were the comparison groups. And so following guidelines are those exact cutoffs up there. So moderate intensity activity four or more times a week when you're talking about a 30-minute session, something like that. And we're happy to take more questions on those details later. You click for me. Okay. So then there is another kind of really interesting study that just came out, I think this was just last month. This was a study asking the question of whether or not changing cardiorespiratory fitness affects developing prostate cancer. And so just to contextualize that, so I mentioned these papers that we worked on in 2011. One of the unique findings from our papers back then, we had some signal that it was really aerobic activity where we saw the associations and not necessarily strength training. Now that could be just because more people do aerobic activity and we didn't have enough people in our studies to really look at strength training. That could be part of it. But in one of the other studies, the one led by Dr. Van Bleringen, she actually found a signal for walking pace, which is walking faster gets your heart rate up. So back from 2011, that's where this, we started having this hypothesis that there's something about getting your heart rate up that's particularly beneficial for deterring prostate cancer progression. So other people have also looked at this, and this was, this is not done by us, but I think the study is very cool. The study was done in Sweden where they actually had an occupational volunteer cohort where people went in for physicals and they could just decide to get like a full-on cardiorespiratory test done in lab. So like very good measurement of cardiovascular fitness. And they managed to identify 52,000 people who had it done twice. So that allowed them to ask this question of, if you change your cardiorespiratory fitness, like it gets better over time versus going down over time, how does that associate with risk of getting prostate cancer? And as you can see here, they basically found that those who increased by 3% or more versus decreased by 3% had a 35% lower risk of developing prostate cancer. And then the other thing that's not on the slide, just by the same group, they looked at one time point measurement of the cardiorespiratory fitness data, because there's more people that had one time point. There's like over 100,000 people who had one time point. And so that allowed them to look at an outcome of prostate cancer death. And so in that study, having higher versus lower cardio, heart lung fitness at a single time point measurement was associated with lower risk of prostate cancer death. So it does sort of corroborate other findings that we've been thinking about a lot. And so a natural question that you might be thinking about, well, what can I do to increase my cardiorespiratory fitness? So we did start a randomized controlled trial 10 years ago to ask that question. It takes a long time to do this kind of research. And then you have a pandemic thrown in there. You can't get people in lab to do this like high expiratory test that we wanted people to do, but we did it. And we published this, I think just last fall in November. So you can do there's a lot of things that can get your heart rate up is basically the message I want people to take away. You can like stand in front of your television and walk briskly and move your arms up and down. And no, which I do. So I say that with like no shame, so go do that. Like if I can tell that I haven't had exercise, I just try to like stay out of eye line of my family members and stand in the back and do that. But anyways, we showed that something like a very accessible home-based walking program, men with early stage low risk prostate cancer were able to increase their fitness levels by 14% in 4 months. So that number may or may not mean anything to you, but to me that sounds like a lot. 14% sounds like a lot. We were aiming, just so you know, our goal with the fitness test was to increase cardiorespiratory fitness by 10%, because our exercise experts tell us that that would be meaningful. And so if any of you joined this trial, just like, thank you so much for your participation. We're blinded to who joins, but good job, because that was good adherence and a really good result. I think that's it. So we just wanted to set the stage. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I noticed some people taking pictures, which is great and lovely. But also, just so you know, we put these up on the urology website, and these are free downloadable PDFs. There's many resources on there. We've worked on these over time from our studies and just in general. So there's a QR code. Adina, do people get the slides? No. Okay. But
if you want to check out the books afterwards, I have a few copies up here.
So maybe snapshot the QR code and then you can access the booklets. Dr. Kenfield, she's very thoughtful about these things. She purposely just got some like hot off the press new material loaded on the website just like yesterday in anticipation of this conference. So check it out. There's 5 new resources.
Yeah. I just want to mention there's a food guide now. So all the foods that we talked about that are prostate healthy, there's a guide that you can download now to shop and prepare those foods. And there's also a healthy convenience item list now on our website on foods that are easy to prep and use. We also have now a guide on managing fatigue with diet and exercise that we released this weekend, yesterday. And then there's another one on managing insomnia as well as smoking cessation.
So and if you forget, just a tip, I think if you Google UCSF urology lifestyle, you'll probably find it. So it's on the website. Okay. And we'll open up for questions. We can always repeat the question. So go ahead.
So could you give me a quick definition of cardiovascular fitness?
Yeah. So in a technical term, the way we measure cardiovascular fitness. So the question is, what's cardiovascular fitness or cardiorespiratory fitness measured in lab? They're measuring how efficient your heart and lungs are moving blood through your body, and it's standardized. They take into consideration your body weight. In basic terms, though, it's how well your heart and lungs are working, right? Of doing that job of moving blood through your body and delivering oxygen to everywhere. In the back.
Do you know of any trials and results for prostate health fasting, coffee?
So I'll just repeat the question and then I'm going to ask Dr. Kentfield to answer it. So the question is about results for fasting or coffee and prostate cancer outcomes.
Yeah, so I think still quite early to tell you what to do about intermittent fasting, whether you should use that method. I think the data have been established that intermittent fasting is good for weight maintenance. It's good for improving your blood pressure, for improving fasting glucose and fasting insulin levels. There are limited pilot studies on intermittent fasting and prostate cancer. There have been studies, short studies, like 3-month studies showing good adherence to intermittent fasting protocols. I think I would not want to recommend that as a pattern to follow at this point. And I would, if you're interested in that, I would talk to your doctor before starting that. There are no studies to date looking at coffee and survival, prostate cancer specific survival in men with prostate cancer. There were studies that I was part of that looked at coffee and incident lethal prostate cancer showing a benefit, but that was for people that were healthy and that was for development of incident fatal prostate cancer.
How about back there with the red shirt?
Yeah. Two questions. Number one, my understanding, you say to avoid red meat. Is there a problem with specifically with chicken? Because what I'm doing now is I'm basically alternating between fish and chicken, but sometimes I eat a lot of chicken. The other question is, I've heard some discussion of the value of a vegan diet. And can you comment on that?
Do you want to?
Well, so first on the chicken question, they're not specific. There's no bad. Are you asking if chicken's bad for you? Is it what?
Is it red meat?
Oh, chicken is not red meat. Sorry. Chicken is like beef, pork, and lamb. Sorry. Poultry without skin is probably what we would recommend because of the fat and skin. And also if you grill, so I was in the guides that Dr. Kenfield just posted, and one of the tips actually is like, if you can cook your meat with the skin on, it actually protects the meat from generating more of the heterocyclic amines or sort of the bad things that happen at high temperature to meat protein, the carcinogens that are generated at high heat, but then don't eat the skin. So, but you get a lot of flavor and juice from cooking with skin on.
These are some of our recommendations on how to replace the processed meat in your diet.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
With healthy alternatives. And this is part of the food guide that you can download on the website.
And I might ask Stan, specific on vegan diet, I have to say in our sort of large population studies, we haven't had the ability really to study that. However, I would ask Stan to comment.
I know my mic is working. Okay. No, all I can say is that all the reading that I've done, studies about vegan diets, is if you supplement with omega-3 and B12, you're doing really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, for general longevity, I understand there's probably studies that have identified vegan diets. Specifically for prostate cancer, saying it's not something we've been able to study.
So June and Stacy, we have like 8 questions from Zoom. How about alternating or something with the audience?
I feel like we should like write down questions and then figure out what we should answer and what's in the guides. But we don't know if we have time for that.
Got to give you one that came in early.
Yeah, go ahead.
How about egg whites?
Yeah, so
egg white's good.
We've studied eggs and prostate cancer. The data that we've seen is that eggs may be harmful in the setting of incident lethal prostate cancer, not after diagnosis. We've also published on choline and the same outcome in healthy men. And the choline is more concentrated in the egg yolk. And so we say, if you're going to eat eggs, eat egg whites. And you'll be fine.
I feel like we should. So I'll ask you if you mind if we do this, just because I'm watching time and I want to make sure we only have like 5-ish minutes if we stay on the original schedule. I'm looking at Eric and Adina for confirmation on this. But you also could like shout out and I can triage questions and we'll take the ones that like there are going to be some which I think are more easily picked up from the guides that we just referred to, and then some we can answer right here. Is that helpful to get us through? I teach also, so this is where I'm used to like triaging student questions. Are there like certain topics, like specific things people want to hear about with diet is what I'm guessing. So if you want to shout out real quick, just.
Thinking you studied that show a difference with advanced prostate cancer and diet versus
It's a good question. So just to caveat, most of our studies have been done in men who are diagnosed with localized disease. Do we have data from? No, we don't have great data if you're starting at the point of advanced disease. However, we're just talking about like what you have at diagnosis. The people who were in the study went on to develop advanced disease. So you could think about it as it's probably still recommended, but I don't have anything specific that would be different. Okay, topics, yeah. Vitamin D, what else? Can I just, if the people just have a topic? Is what?
Smoked salmon.
Okay, what else? Smoked salmon. I heard smoked turkey.
Say soy milk or almond milk or hemp milk.
Alternative milks. Oh, okay.
Intensity of exercise, definition of.
Okay.
Ketogenic diet.
Keto. Okay.
Soy products are fine. Is the short answer. We recommend whole foods with soy.
Yeah. Okay, great. Smoking in general is considered a processing form. And actually, if you look at what counts as processing, there's a lot of like ground meat is technically processed right? So a lot of foods that we eat have some degree of processed, but in the score, it's ultra processed foods, right? So that's like more steps of processing. I don't know, what do you think about these? Probably not the best, but I'm not gonna say they're better than probably eating a grilled beef burger. So like, if you like it, I would be careful about salt.
Yeah, I have this slide on the mechanisms of processed meat. So you also don't want to cook meat at high temperatures, like grilling meat. And then I think there are probably some issues with curing and smoking meat. And these are the chemicals that are causing the cancer. And then just going back here, what's been associated with cancer? We know that processed meat is considered a group one carcinogen. The evidence is very strong for colorectal cancer. For red meat, it's considered a group 2A carcinogen, probably causes cancer. And then there's been a number of studies showing that red and processed meat are associated with many different chronic diseases and death.
Generally, alternative milk's fine, generally recommended, especially in lieu of like high fat dairy for sure. As Dr. Kenfield said, soy products probably fine. Impossible burger, interesting question. Not studied very much, obviously, because it's pretty new. However, this would count as a highly processed food, just by the way. So it's ultra processed. But is ultra processed soy compared to beef? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think Greta would recommend it.
Yeah, so our cancer center nutritionist would probably not recommend it. She would try to recommend something else, like a garbanzo bean burger, or even maybe like a chicken.
Portobello burger.
A portobello burger, thank you. But if this keeps you from eating 100% red meat, probably better. So it's all, one of the things that we talked about earlier, which I also would like to share, is like, we make these choices every day, multiple times a day. And so you have many, many opportunities to do a little bit better here and maybe be okay with not doing something there, because you're just also living life and you want to enjoy life. And so I keep that, you know, try to keep that in mind. It's like, I'm going to walk faster now. I might have that burger later, but I'll make sure I eat some salad later. So you have to kind of figure out where you're at. Stan's on a vegan journey, and you could talk to him about what it took to get there. But it's like, I think it would be very hard to do everything at once, and then you feel not good, right? You feel deprived. So I'm a very big proponent of like small choices, small tweaks to get yourself towards whatever your goals are.
Yeah, so to avoid the large predatory deep ocean fish like marlin and swordfish and shark and those types of fish, but the other smaller fish are fine to eat.
How about diet affecting the side effects of ADT? You've written up on that. I know you've written.
Yeah. We have a paper on that topic. We recommend that you follow a healthy diet. Like, there's also the issue of losing lean mass with ADT. And so I would emphasize start resistance training if you haven't started that yet. I think that's more important, actually. We also have material now on our website about fatigue during treatment and tips on how to eat healthy, what to eat to maintain energy, and what exercises to do if you don't feel like you're fully energetic.
So the questions up there about a ketogenic diet, similar to like intermittent fasting, I don't think it's not like the jury's done deliberating. There's not enough research on that specifically for prostate cancer. I'd also just be cautious with what someone interprets as ketogenic diet. Oftentimes there's a lot of high protein and high fat, just to be careful what the sources of those are. If the goal is weight loss, similar with intermittent fasting, you know, it could be multiple paths to a similar goal. One of the things to keep in mind with both of those things is they're likely affecting insulin metabolism, glucose levels, which indirectly may have a benefit for prostate cancer and multiple cancer types and lots of other chronic conditions. So there is a biological, theoretical way that it could be beneficial. I'm personally just it's not a focus of study, and I'm not aware of like a lot of great data on that specific for prostate cancer. But I could see how weight loss or effects on insulin metabolism could theoretically be beneficial. I don't know about, I'm not prepared to answer about Q coenzyme Q10. Sorry. What about vitamin D? Just take us, is it the, like, vitamin D is important for general absorption of calcium, bone health, many other things in life. Is it important?
You know, we have not looked at single supplements, vitamin D, and those clinical prostate cancer outcomes. I would recommend, though, getting tested for your vitamin D level, because most of us are low. I'm low. We should all be trying to hit the at least the minimum that we need. And so we recommend for that supplement specifically, that most of us probably need to be taking a supplement.
But please get tested first. Because you spend a lot of time outdoors.
The subject of vitamin D and in the context of osteoporosis, and with ADT, et cetera, the study said that D3 and high levels of calcium, what are all that contributory benefits on improving osteoporosis? Any validity to that?
The question was about supplementing with vitamin D for osteoporosis and calcium together.
I don't know.
Sorry. I don't want to misspeak. I'm not up on that. What I am aware of, there was a trial. It's the VITAL trial on vitamin D supplementation. They've asked a bunch of questions with regards to heart health and cognitive function. I think there were some suggestive benefits in those areas. But I'm not remembering like the small details right now. And I don't remember any detail.
If you can hear me, we have a session also in the advanced prostate cancer on bone health. So I think Dr. Friedlander will be able to talk about some of those. Yeah.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, great.
We're past time. We're like 4 minutes past the next speakers. So, good question. So what defines intensity of exercise? It's all relative, actually. So what we did in our trial, for example, is people came in, we measured their baseline, and then slowly tried to work them up. So what gets your heart rate up to a certain... So everything is measured. Everyone has a VO2 max. Like if you go in lab, they'll measure your VO2 max, maximal amount that you can move blood and oxygen through your body. And the goal is to increase your capacity to do that. And everyone is different at a different starting point. And so... intensity has to do with the percentage that you're like exerting relative to your VO2 max. So say your VO2 max is 180, intensity is going to be working your heart rate at like 60 to 80% of 180. So getting your heart rate beats per minute into something that's 60 to 80% of 180. I can't do the math in my head, but technically that's how it's all working. It's based on your heart rate, your fitness. And then you want to work into a certain percentage of your maximal VO2, maximal heart rate. But it's different for everyone. So we do generally recommend doing some kind of base test because it's, especially if you're working out with somebody else, it may take a lot less for one person to get their heart rate up to their 65% level versus someone else. There's a lot of smart watches and chest straps and things like that that will walk you through all of that these days, actually. So we use those in the trial.
Yeah, and I do want to just say that we have this chart in our exercise booklet that shows your by age and what is moderate intensity, what is vigorous intensity exercise. It gives you ranges for those.
A layperson thing, a really basic thing, though, that the exercise specialist will say, like, what is it? It's... if you can sing, you're not working hard enough. If you can talk, you might be at the moderate level. And then if you can't talk at all, you're probably at vigorous. So it's like, walk, sing.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.